double comes.
Pascal Siakam and the Toronto Raptors are on pace for their best record in franchise history, a feat that few saw coming after they lost Finals MVP Kawhi Leonard. But even as Toronto makes the skeptics look foolish, questions continue to swirl around the team. Does the roster have enough firepower to make a deep playoff run? And can Siakam make a leap to join the league's elite? I'm Mina Kimes. It's Friday, February 28th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by ADT. Hey, Tim.
Hello, Mina.
We're giving the Raptors the respect they deserve. Where do they rank on the aggrieved, we don't get any respect fan bases?
If not number one, they're extremely high on the list.
Tim Bontemps is an NBA writer for ESPN and has spent much of the past two seasons reporting on the Toronto Raptors. Tim, if you had gathered 100 NBA experts in a room in September, how many of them do you think would have predicted that the Toronto Raptors would be the second best team in the East at the end of February?
Very few, Mina, very few. I mean, I was probably higher on the Raptors than most, having spent a lot of time with them last year on their way to the title. And even though they lost Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, they had the core back of a team that won almost 60 games. And remember, I think went 18-4 last year when Kawhi didn't play. So this is not a team that was, you know, a one-man show that had no talent around him, right? So I thought if they were healthy, they had a chance to push for a top four seed in the East and, you know, be a team that could maybe get to the second round, maybe if everything broke right, get back to the Eastern Conference Finals. However, not only are they in second place in the Eastern Conference, they've had everybody hurt all season. They have never had virtually their entire team available for even one game, let alone all season. So if you had said before the year the Raptors were in second place in the East with, you know, a quarter of the season to go, I would have said, well, they've had perfect health and they've gotten lucky. And instead, they've had no health luck at all and gotten fairly unlucky. And they've still gone on a 15-game winning streak and are right back where they were last year. It's really a pretty remarkable achievement and a real credit to the infrastructure that that team has put together, that they can, you know, bounce back from one of the best players in the world leaving their team and still be a real factor in the Eastern Conference.
Looking at the Raptors' team stats, Tim, I see that Siakam's gone from 17 points per game last season to 24 this year. Obviously, that's helped them compensate for some of the production they've lost from Kawhi. You recently spoke with Pascal and wrote about him. How much of the Raptors' success would you say is due to his improvement?
A lot of it. I mean, you know, we could talk about the job Nick Nurse has done. He's probably the clear favorite right now to be coach of the year. You could talk about the other depth that Toronto has around Pascal. But, you know, going into last season, he wasn't even expected to start. OG Anunoby was expected to start. And Pascal went, not only did he take the starting job that year, he went on to win the NBA's Most Improved Player Award. And now this year has come back and taken yet another leap, really in an unprecedented way, to be a guy who, through the first 2 months of the season, when I did a straw poll of potential MVP voters, he finished fifth, ahead of Kawhi Leonard, ahead of Anthony Davis. You could say a lot of things about why Toronto's been good, but the fact of the matter is, to have Pascal make this kind of leap, it's no surprise that Toronto's been able to stay in the mix at the top of the East.
Why wasn't he seen as a likely superstar when he came into the league?
Well, Pascal's story is pretty remarkable. I mean, he's a guy who came to basketball very late, growing up in Cameroon.
I started playing basketball when I was like 15, 16, almost 17 years old. And it's something that I didn't really want to do at first, but I got taller. And then I had opportunities to go to different camps that kind of like made basketball interesting for me.
He ends up coming over to the States and playing for a couple of years. His brothers have played professionally. He ends up at New Mexico State. And while he's there, he's a really active, energy big, gets a lot of rebounds, but is not a guy who's outside, out on the perimeter shooting threes, is not a guy who's handling the ball in games. When he got drafted, he got taken 27th overall by the Raptors in 2016. And I remember kind of looking up at the stage and being like, who is that guy, Pascal Siakam, that the Raptors has drafted? I wasn't even sure who he was at the time. And when he came into the NBA, went out and busted his tail and played 12 to 14 minutes a game. And he kind of thought, hey, this is a guy who has a chance to develop into a nice complimentary player on a good Toronto Raptors team. You never would have expected in your wildest dreams that he had a chance to become an all-star and an all-NBA player and a guy that the Raptors gave a max contract to in the fall and expect to build around in the years ahead.
He was a very good player last year, but he wasn't an elite player necessarily. How has his game changed this season and how he's been used by Toronto as well?
Well, the thing that's been so fascinating to watch with Pascal is the way he's been able to add stuff to his game every year. You go through the first 2 years of his career, he was a 22% three-point shooter, one of the worst three-point shooters in the entire league. Last year, when he won Most Improved Player of the Year, he jumped that up to 37%.
Here's Siakam with a three. Here's Siakam, three, good!
This year, he comes back, and he's basically taken twice as many threes as he did last year.
Finds an open Siakam, good, from Sarnia. Spicy P, drills it from Castle Guard.
Meanwhile, he's also now handling the ball a lot more. His usage rate, which is kind of determines how much you have the ball in your hands, how much you're making plays for other people, is skyrocketed up to, you know, the upper echelon of the NBA where all the star players are.
Here's Siakam backing in, spinning, plus the foul! The sheer will and drive of Pascal!
And at the same time, he's still one of the better defensive players in the league, and Nick Nurse, the coach of the Raptors, still has him guarding some of the best players on the other team all the time.
The reason that Siakam... Oh! You a dunk, and then he gets you a block.
A lot of these guys, as they get better in the league and they grow in their roles, it's kind of like, all right, you know, maybe you add this and then you have to take a little bit away to counterbalance it. Where with Pascal, it's really at each step along the way, he's just taken on more and more responsibility. And frankly, at every point, it doesn't seem like he has to slow down at all.
What has Pascal told you about the steps he's taken to make these leaps as a player?
Well, the thing that stands out to me about Pascal is when you talk to him about getting in the gym and working out, like his eyes light up and he just like radiates energy. He's just so excited to talk about what it feels like to get in the gym and get better and to work on his game and to make improvements. Like last year in the playoffs, when he played against Milwaukee and against Philly, there were times when both those teams would not really defend him and they would let him shoot.
Siakam, not able to hit. Open shot, but again, Siakam not able to hit. It's kept alive.
He went back and watched film of those games and said, listen, these are the things that I need to focus on to get better in the playoffs because these are the games that matter. And you just don't hear guys talk a lot like that, especially coming off a title, right? Like Pascal won Most Improved Player of the Year. He won the title. He played great in the finals. Like this would have been the perfect time for him to be just kind of happy, right? And yet he's still as intensely focused as ever on trying to get better every day.
I just continue to get excited about the process and understanding what you need to do to keep it consistent. Whereas, like, you know, you have that high level of play every single game. I want to get better so that, you know, teams can prepare more for me.
One thing I find so interesting about Pascal, Tim, is like Joel Embiid, who's also from Cameroon, he hasn't been playing basketball for very long. Having spent time around him and, you know, watching him develop as a player, do you think that factors at all into how quickly he's advanced?
No question about it, Mina. And the thing when you talk to people about Pascal, they all tend to say the same thing, which is this guy came to basketball so late. He didn't have to relearn any bad habits. He didn't have to get taught to do anything in a way to recorrect stuff that he learned when he was 8, 9, 10 years old and did for a decade. Right. And I think that really, to me, is the big reason why Pascal's be able to take these dramatic leaps forward. It's almost like Neo in the Matrix, where like they plug him into the machine and all of a sudden he's just kind of voraciously downloading everything he could possibly get his hands on. And for Pascal, that's the way his game is developed, where he just comes back every summer and he's added some piece to his game and taken yet another leap forward and, you know, progressed again, just far beyond anything Toronto in its wildest dreams could have hoped for when they took him in the draft.
What would you say was the moment this season where Siakam really established himself as, you know, not just the most improved player, but an actual MVP candidate?
And it was really in that stretch, in basically the month of November, when Kyle Lowry was hurt, that Pascal kept his team afloat and rolling at the top of the East, when people said, wow, like Pascal Siakam is doing stuff that he is not supposed to be able to be doing.
Pascal sees the lane and just takes him off the bounce.
And he's playing at a level that he is not supposed to be able to be playing at.
Ahead to Pascal, to the rim, a vicious slam dunk.
And because of that, the Raptors are really good.
Siakam backing in, fading. Oh, man. Yeah, you can't stop him.
Hey, man.
MIP to MVP.
He was able to consistently come out and produce at a level that some of the best players in the league are playing at, averaging 25-plus points, 5-plus assists, 5-plus rebounds every single night, making three-pointers, making plays out of the pick and roll, setting up other guys, playing defense at a high level still. The fact that he could put all that stuff together for a consistent period of time, I think really said to the league, like, wow, this guy has taken yet another leap, and because of that, Toronto has a chance to be a lot better team than we all thought.
Coming up, why Toronto's playoff success may lie in the hands of a player not named Pascal Siakam.
The best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge. I mean, just ask the New York Knicks. When it comes to hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates for your team fast, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services and more. And now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Tim, it's one thing to be, you know, the best player on a very good team. It's quite another to do what Kawhi Leonard has now done twice, right? Which is be that guy on a team that wins the NBA Finals. Do you think Pascal has that in him?
It remains to be seen. I mean, look, I think saying anybody has it in them to be one of the 5 or 10 best players in the world is probably a stretch, right? But Pascal has proven time and again that anybody who's doubted his ability to take a leap beyond what they expect is wrong. Right. So at this point, I think it's just a matter of waiting and seeing what he can do. But I think you saw this week when the Raptors hosted the Bucks on Tuesday and they saw Giannis Antetokounmpo, the guy who Kawhi Leonard went toe to toe with in the Eastern Conference Finals and bested. You saw the areas where Pascal and the Raptors need to grow if they want to be a team that has a chance to get back to the finals this year and potentially defend their title. In that game, the Bucks, who are a team that don't let people get to the rim and they force you into shots you don't want to take and basically force you to stand on the perimeter and just bomb away because they're so big and long and athletic, they don't let you get anywhere. Pascal basically didn't make a shot inside the three-point line until garbage time at the end of the game.
Siakam, he saw Williams trip. Lopez, the help defender, and he blocks it out of bounds. Siakam, a swarm, rejected number 4.
The Bucks really were able to take him out of the things that make him successful, getting out in transition, attacking the rim, being able to kind of get to his spots in the half court, all the stuff that he has spent a lot of time working on and he's gotten a lot better at, and it's allowed him to take the leaps that he's made. For him to be a player that can go toe-to-toe with a guy like Giannis, like Kawhi did last year, he has to be able to do those things against the very best teams in the very biggest moments. And look, this was a Tuesday in February. It doesn't mean that the Raptors season is over, but the flaws that people were worried about with them and with him in terms of being that elite level team and that elite level player, they were exposed a little bit on Tuesday. And those are the questions that both he and the Raptors are going to have to answer, whether it's this year and the years to come, that are going to determine whether, you know, Pascal can actually be that top 5, top 10 type player, and whether the Raptors can truly be the championship contender they were last year.
Pascal's undeniably, I think, replaced a lot of Leonard's production, but then that sort of leads us to, well, what about his production, right? I mean, you're kind of creating new holes or potential gaps in this team. Do they have the manpower to fill out the rest of a starting roster?
Well, that's the other thing that's curious about this team. Now, Toronto would push back on any criticism of the way their season's gone or the amount of firepower they have and say, listen, we haven't had our top eight guys healthy for one game this season. So let us wait until we have our guys and see what we look like. And I think the question about this team going into the playoffs is, are they going to be able to score enough to compete with teams like Milwaukee and Boston and Miami and Philly in a seven-game playoff series? And again, against the Bucks, you saw that where Toronto's defense really did a great job slowing down Milwaukee's offense.
Adetokounmpo matched up with Siakam. You can see how Toronto's loaded up to keep them out of the paint.
Bodies bumping. Adetokounmpo misses it from the side, and the crowd reacts.
But when they would get to the other end of the court, once Toronto stopped making threes, all of a sudden their offense just fell apart. And they weren't able to really do anything in the half court in terms of attacking Milwaukee's defense and getting baskets.
Davis missed it long. Same team. Boucher misses it from three-point territory, and he ended up on his backside. Ibaka way off on a three ball. Rebound dug out by...
If you go back and watch the playoffs last year, we saw Kawhi Leonard time and again just get to his spot in the mid-range and score, or get to the rim and score. Whenever Toronto needed baskets, he was the guy who stepped up and made those plays.
If you had to pick one of those other Raptors to sort of be the X factor in a playoffs, who would it be?
I think it's probably OG Anunoby.
Up top, OG! Oh my!
If you see OG Anunoby walk into a locker room or walk onto a court, you go, that guy is a basketball player. Like he is just built like a brick wall. And you see him do stuff on the court occasionally where you're just like, man, this guy has the potential to be a really special player. Like even in that game on Tuesday, he went toe-to-toe with Giannis, and Giannis shot 5-for-14 from the field. It's not like Giannis was out there, you know, putting up a ton of numbers. He ended up with 19 points, 19 rebounds, and 8 assists because he's probably the best player on the planet. And, you know, he can have huge numbers even if he's not shooting the ball well. But a big reason why he was not able to have the kind of normal production he had offensively was because OG Anunoby was leaning up against him and, you know, really giving him a lot of trouble. If the Raptors are going to really take that step, I think the most realistic outcome is that OG becomes that player behind Pascal that Pascal was behind Kawhi last year. And if that can happen, if you're Toronto, you'd have to feel really good about your chances to be an elite level team for, you know, really the next few years.
So the Bucks are obviously the big dog in the conference. But to get to the point where they're playing the Bucks, they're going to have to go through, you know, either Boston, Miami, Philadelphia. How do the Raptors match up with that second level of teams in the East?
Well, Toronto is certainly right in the mix with those teams, Mina. And I think if you ask them, they feel confident about not only beating them, but beating Milwaukee in a playoff series. But the series that I want to see happen personally is Toronto to play Boston in the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. Right now, that's slated to happen. They're basically in a neck-and-neck fight for the two seed. If the seeds hold after the first round, those teams would play in the second round. And I think that would have a chance from a basketball perspective to be one of the best series in the entire playoffs. Because both of those teams have a lot of rangy wing players. They can play big, they can play small, they can do a lot of different things. They have a lot of high IQ guys. And it would just be a fascinating basketball matchup to see how that would play out. And frankly, it might just come down to which of these two teams has home court. Like last year, we saw Toronto only get out of the second round, basically, because they had game 7 against Philly, and they were able to hang on for dear life in that final game and have Kawhi Leonard hit, you know, the shot that bounced around the rim 7,000 times before it fell in and allowed them to advance.
Is this the dagger?
I think they have a chance to get back to the Eastern Conference Finals. I do think they can beat any of these teams, but it might be the games that happen over the next 6 weeks that determine whether they or Boston gets that two seed that ends up being the real determining factor that decides which of those teams ends up advancing to probably play Milwaukee in the Eastern Conference Finals in May.
Tim, regardless of how this season plays out for Toronto, if they make it back to the finals, it's undeniably a success, right? Given expectations. Do you think there's anything the rest of the league can take from not just this team, but this organization? Because they seem to have found a formula for, you know, long-term success, even despite, you know, facing adversity, injuries, losing stars, they're still in the mix.
Yeah, I think there's two really big things, Mina, that the Raptors have shown me and I think should show anybody who's paying attention around the league. The first is the importance of player development. You look around the league, there are a lot of teams that end up with a lot of young players that just don't really pan out. And being able to find the right guys and plug them into your system and see them get better, there's just no more important skill than that. And you go down the line with Toronto. They signed an undrafted rookie in Terrence Davis. He's now playing significant rotation minutes. OG Anunoby's gotten better every year. We've obviously talked a lot about Pascal. Fred VanVleet is a guy who went from being undrafted to a guy who helped them win the title last year. Norm Powell was a second-round pick that has developed into a core piece for them. They've gone and found guys in unconventional ways over and over and over again. And I think that there's so many teams around the league that end up with one lottery pick after another that never win. You can have all the young talent and all the shots at good young players in the world. If you can't develop them into good NBA players, you're never going to have a chance to win. And that goes into the second part, which is the infrastructure part. The thing that is really impressive about Toronto when you're around them is just how put together this organization is from the top down. From Masai Ujiri, president of basketball operations, to Bobby Webster, the GM, to Nick Nurse, the head coach, the Raptors just have their stuff together. And it's kind of like being around the Spurs when the Spurs were kind of at the peak of their powers with Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker. It didn't really matter who the Spurs played, right, on a given night. You knew the Spurs were going to come out and give you an A effort every night. And no matter who was sitting or who was available, the Spurs are going to play like the Spurs, and most of the time they're going to win. And this Toronto team, all they've done is come back and overcome all these injuries and develop their young players and continue to win and once again put themselves in a position to make a deep run in the playoffs. So to me, they've really established themselves as one of the model organizations in the league and, you know, have put themselves in a position where kind of regardless of what this happens this season, they have young talent going forward. They have cap space. They have designs on trying to chase star players in 2021, whether it's Giannis or other guys. And as long as this infrastructure is in place, the Raptors should feel confident that they're going to be a factor in the East for a long time.
Thanks so much, Tim.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Coming up, why we need to give even more props to another team in the East. Whatever you want to protect, nobody has more ways to help keep you safe than ADT, the most trusted name in security. You can customize an ADT security package to help protect your home in a way that works for you and your budget. ADT has HD video doorbells, indoor and outdoor cameras, smart lights, smart locks, smart thermostats, flood sensors, fire and carbon monoxide detectors, all connected to 24/7 monitoring and controlled by the sound of your voice or the ADT app. So help protect your home today with ADT. Learn more at ADT.com/podcast. Here's another story I want you to know. So now that you've heard about the criminally underrated Toronto Raptors, I'd like to talk about the criminally underrated Milwaukee Bucks. Now you might be saying, what? Everybody knows that the Bucks are the best team in the league. They are properly rated. And yet, I still don't think we're giving them their due. Our Chris Herring has a piece in 538 where he points out that Milwaukee's allowing just 102 points per 100 possessions, which not only makes them the best defense in the NBA by a long shot, that's more than 8 points lower than the league average, but also makes them the best defense in more than 10 years and the eighth best in NBA history. What's even more fascinating is that, as Chris writes in his story, they're doing it in an unconventional fashion. You could say they're bucking the trend. They are playing fast, they're allowing teams to take a ton of three-pointers, and they're giving up more drives to the rim per 100 possessions than any other team, which would seem to be bad per the current conventional wisdom. Except, they're often allowing bad shooters to take those threes, and they're holding teams to just under 60% inside of 3 feet, which is the lowest mark in the NBA. So basically, they've outsmarted smart basketball. Now, it's an open question as to whether this will work in the playoffs, where the Bucks will encounter better shooters, but it's working now. So let's give them the credit they deserve and rate them correctly. as a team that's not just good, but historically great. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Michael Baltierra, Troy Farkas, Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, David Cerosi, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. I'll talk to you Monday.